Let's assume that your son or daughter has enduring happiness. Enduring happiness. How do you feel about that? And they go, oh, fantastic. But there's one caveat. They're not a good person. They go, what? No, they're not a good person. How in the heck did I end up in the character space? I'm a guy who's writing books on mental toughness. Looks like I'm for the wussification of the world. And in fact, that's not the case. I'm all about winning. But winning in the right way, I wrote a book, The Only Way to Win is to Win with Character, and The Only Way to Lose is to Lose with Character. I mean, it's unbelievable the number of times that you get a no. You have to handle no. It's an unbelievable sport for teaching resiliency, to bounce back and go right back into the battle until you get it right.
All right, welcome to another edition of the Tennis Worthy Podcast, everyone. I'm Patrick McEnroe, proud to be the president of the International Tennis Hall of Fame. And we've run the gamut this year. We've had tremendous guests, and we're going to have yet another one today. The world-renowned, the world-famous Dr. Jim Lehrer joining me. We got to speak a few years ago, Jim, on my own podcast, but it sure is a pleasure to welcome you to the Tennis Worthy Podcast for the Tennis Hall of Fame. We in the tennis world appreciate all you've done for tennis and mental health, mental toughness. We're going to get into that today. Welcome to you.
Patrick, it is always an honor for me to join you in whatever context we can. The contributions, you've been a great inspiration to me on many levels. I just love the work you've done. Unbelievable. Commentating and with your Hall of Fame and with your leadership with young people. And you're right on the cutting edge, I think, of a lot of the big issues that face the world of tennis. So thank you. And thank you for the opportunity to maybe add some value here.
Yeah, well, I'm very sure about that. Now, much of your career, Jim, has been about helping elite performers, right? Take care of the person behind their performance. Today, athletes, fans, talking about mental health, mental toughness in a way that they didn't do 10, 20, maybe even 30 years ago. I'd like to explore how we got there and how tennis, as always, has been leading the way and how you've led the way in this department.
Well, it's such an interesting question, issue for me. You know, I started out, I got my master's and doctorate in psychology, specializing in mental health. And I became a licensed psychologist in Colorado. And I got appointed to the chief psychologist and executive director of a very large community mental health center that served the whole central and southern part of Colorado. So we had 9 offices. It was a huge 8,600 square mile catchment area. And my whole focus was on mental health. And now it's interesting that we're looking at mental health through this lens. At that time, I really didn't really understand the dynamics like I do today because of all the opportunities I've had. And so I will tell you the most important experience I've had out of all my experiences was my immersion into the Nick Bollettieri Tennis Academy for 6 years. And I was the director of sports psychology and sport science. And that was the experience that changed my trajectory and my understanding in a dynamic way.
Now, when you first recognized that and sort of the emotional and psychological side of performance, when did you realize that that was being neglected in a way that you felt that you could really impact? Was it during that time at Bollettieri's?
Well, I was kind of the one out. I was a weird kind of specialist. At that time, psychology applied to tennis. You were kind of a weirdo if you went to see anyone specializing in psychology. There must have been something wrong with you. And so when Nick said, come down here, and I began to look at, you know, they had some of the most incredibly talented young men and women. But this system that they had there, it was all about achievement. Achievement was the way in which you recognized your value as a human being. And that those that achieved the most had the most benefit from whatever the experience was. And they had maybe the most secure sense of identity. But there were like 5 groups, 6 groups. If you were at the top group, were Courier and all of, you know, all the best players, Sellis and everybody were involved, Wheaton and everyone. you know, that was a huge accomplishment, and it made them feel really great because they were chasing stardom, achievement. But the kids at the bottom in group 5 or 6 or 4 and their identity, and they were working as hard or maybe harder than those at the top. And I'm looking out at this and I'm going, wait a minute, what is the story here for them? How, because they're only as good as their group number or their ranking or their ability to be a star, because they were sent there to be an extraordinary achiever. And so I began to look in that envelope, and I was quite disturbed on what I found.
Well, what exactly did you find that made that disturb you?
Well, the thing that bothered me was that, you know, I began to realize there's a person inside of all this. And that person, we began to explore what are the things that actually enable that human being to feel like somebody more than just a tennis player who's defined by their rankings and by their achievement. And so I started looking at the whole person, their physical health, their emotional health, their mental health, and their character health, and try to figure out how do we build an environment that actually addresses not just their achievement in tennis, but the whole person. And that began a whole journey for me to try to find new and creative ways to do that. And what we found was that the more you're helping people get healthier in all dimensions, the mentally tougher they were in their matches. They weren't likely to get nervous or choke as much because they weren't defining themselves by the win-loss record, or if they lose to this person that is so inferior to them, that doesn't mean they're a less of a person. They're actually feeling pretty good about themselves. And that for me was a huge insight. And so, you know, I have some questions. If you want me to, I'll just raise this issue and see what you think. But I would do this with parents, and I would say this. Let's assume that your son or daughter has enduring happiness. Enduring happiness. How do you feel about that? And they go, oh, fantastic. But there's one caveat. They're not a good person. They go, what? No, they're not a good person. And then how about if they really achieve unbelievable things, but they're not a particularly good person? No, I don't want that. How about if they're really healthy physically, but not a particularly good person? And I would go all the way down this list, and they would drop them all off, and they say no. So the priority was a good person. They want their son or daughter to be a good person. Even the players themselves, if they had to compromise something, most of them would say, I don't want to compromise who I am as a person. So then the question became, what the heck is a good person?
Right.
How do you develop a good person? What the heck is that? So we began to lay that out, and it really is your connection to other people, the way in which you treat other people. So your honesty, your trustworthiness, your truthfulness, your reliability, your integrity, your compassion, your caring, your humility. So we went, these are assets that I would call character, moral, ethical character assets that define the highest priority in every human being. And so we start with that. And whatever the journey is on high achievement in tennis or anything else with any coach, we want to make sure we're not compromising any of those assets and that we're actually building those. And here's what we found. I went on with the Human Performance Institute. We had over almost 400,000 high achievers from every sector of high performance, military, special forces, race car teams, sumo wrestlers, I mean, in every arena. And our data showed us that the single most important dynamic in helping people get stronger mentally and emotionally and so forth was simply improving their health. And health at the highest level is character health. Because if you don't have that, you've lost the plot. And so we started at the Institute to try to emphasize that. And this is like, I go, how in the heck did I end up in the character space? I'm a guy who's writing books on mental toughness. Looks like I'm for the wussification of the world. And in fact, that's not the case. I'm all about winning, but winning in the right way. I wrote a book, The Only Way to Win is to Win with Character. And the only way to lose is to lose with character.
I'm looking over at my bookshelf, which is just to my right. I'm here in my home basement, my studio, and I see The Only Way to Win, Jim Lehrer. It's right there on my bookshelf. You know, you've worked with so many. You mentioned all the, you know, people of all varying backgrounds, obviously, but you got your start in tennis, and we in the tennis world are very proud of that, that you started and that you're still so connected to tennis. You know, Monica Seles, Jim Courier. I mean, we go down the list of all the great, the Hall of Famers that you've worked with. What's one early story of a tennis player that changed your understanding, Dr. Lehrer, of how to coach the mind?
Well, it actually was a very gradual progression. And every single person I work with, I feel like, is a living laboratory for me to understand a little bit more about how the mind and body work. This is an integrated system. And if you tweak one end of the system, it actually reverberates throughout. So even the look on your face as a competitor, the way in which you look, whether you feel like you're enjoying yourself or this is a horrendous thing that I'm involved in. It's a life and death struggle. The way you walk, the way you carry yourself, what you had for breakfast, what's your blood sugar level, what kind of environment have you been in the school situation, and how much pressure are you feeling in other parts of your life? I began to realize all of this connects to how you're performing at this moment, being able to focus in the moment, moment to moment, in a match situation. So we've got to get the person healthier in every dimension. Don't just focus on your tennis exclusively. You have to have great coaches, great physios, great medical attention. And the more we realize it's the whole person that actually makes this possible, that was when I began to realize that is the formula to bring someone. And then if they don't make it to the top, and when I looked at the kids at Balotelli's, how many of them really were going to go to the highest level of professional tennis and make a living? A very small percentage, but every one of them believed that was their future. And if they didn't make it, it was like all these years were a complete waste of time. What am I doing here? And so for me, it was repurposing all of their lives, that you're in this crucible of tennis to become a stronger, healthier, more character-driven person. And if you get to the top, that's icing on the cake, but you're here to grow up and become a stronger human being for the rest of your life. And the more that message reverberated, every day was an opportunity, not a threat, an opportunity to grow, get stronger in all dimensions, eat a little better, meditate just so that you have a little more peace, understand how to deal with people, how to be more respectful, how to speak the truth and be more authentic. And the more we had coaches who were aligned with those messages, the better they got and the less they actually choked under pressure. And so for me, it was a gradual understanding. I feel very fortunate to have had that living laboratory for all these years because that's why I loved talking about it. A lot of people think it's you just have to go out and visualize more and be, work on your mental skills and all that. And that is a part of it. But there's so much more to this ability to handle pressure and to be able to do it in a way that doesn't compromise who you have become as a person.
Well, it's a true pleasure for me to be with Dr. Jim Lehrer, who's done so much for mental toughness, mental health. You've worked with, you know, as you said, you start out with young kids, you work with college kids. What's a healthy identity look like, say, for a 12-year-old, for a college player, for a successful elite professional player? How does that evolve and what does that look like to you?
So I'm really adamant that coaches need to get the purpose for sport right. The number of kids who will become even D1 scholarship players, the number of kids who are going to make their living in professional sports as a competitive athlete, it's so minuscule, it's almost a probability that doesn't exist. So why go through all this? Why spend all this money? Why to mobilize, have kids go away and all this time in academies? All the sacrifices, all the injuries, what is going to make all of that worth it? If you know it, there'll be a small percentage that even get to a D1 scholarship school. So for me, when coaches say, listen, I'm in your life to use tennis to help you become an extraordinary human being. Tennis is brutal. All the losses, injuries. How many times did Novak Djokovic have to miss his down-the-line backhand before he wired that sucker up, or how he learned to put that outside foot and bring it back rather than running through the ball and to be able to defend the way he was? I worked with Novak for a couple of years, and I watched all of that. His discipline, I mean, it's unbelievable the number of times that you get a no. You have to handle no. It's an unbelievable sport for teaching resiliency, to bounce back and to go right back into the battle until you get it right. So this is a miraculous sport. I've worked in just about every sport, from boxing and everything else. I don't think there's another sport that teaches people how to deal with the forces of life in a better way than tennis does. How to deal with disappointment. How to deal with when you have pressure that you should never lose this match. You're playing a duck. If you lose to this duck, that means you're less than a duck. And all of that, you know, that sense of threat that comes up. And so the more you have this positioned properly, this isn't about winning. It's about growing up and understanding how to prepare yourself for a bigger game, which is the bigger game of life. And so when you put it in that context, you never lose. Every day you get better. All I say to my players, I want you to get better. No matter what happens, I want you to get better. Learn more. Become a force in the world that we're better tomorrow than you are today. And a loss is simply a no. The more you beat yourself up, if you had things you could have controlled, you need to go back and look at that. But the most important thing is you don't shy away from pressure and you do chase achievement. But I'm most interested in who you're becoming as a consequence of the chase, as a person of character.
So one of my other jobs I'm lucky enough to have is to work with my brother and our team at the Tennis Academy. And so I'll be heading there this afternoon, as well as I do most days when I'm here at home. And, you know, I see the parents, I see the kids. We have a bigger homeschool program than we ever had before. That's grown. We have more kids playing tennis, which is great. If I could bring Dr. Jim Lehrer with me to meet with the players, the coaches, and the parents, what message would you deliver?
It would be just basically what I said. I would say, let's make sure every single person understands that you are not going to be defined by things you cannot control. You don't. If you could control winning, you would never lose. If you could control not making mistakes, you don't make those mistakes on purpose. The reason you are at this academy for us is to learn tennis and through tennis become a better, stronger human being. And if we get that right, the coaches understand it. They're looking for the person first. Let's make sure the person first is really the issue, and that they're becoming, they don't cheat, they don't act out, they don't disrespect others. And you've got to set guidelines that I'm sure you do, the between point time, how you deal with losses and how you prepare for matches, your mindset going in. That's all part of it. But it's all to build the way in which you're going to address the world in a game that actually matters more than what happens today on the court, except this should prepare you better for the big game.
Yeah, I know you talk a lot about those, and you just kind of brought up a little bit about rituals, and you've talked a lot about energy management being more important than time management. What does that look like on a tennis court?
So, you know, you can spend hours on, I would watch it, the Nick Baltieri Tennis Academy or at our academy, and you see everyone was on time, you know, that they, but some got so much more out of the time they invested. And for me, I began to realize it's not about time. It's about the energy you bring to the time you have aligned with whatever the mission is. And so we got to make your energy, your commitment, your effort, your attitude as the most important element, as opposed to just showing up. I want you fully engaged here, not just being on time. We have an obsession with time. I want people to be obsessed with the energy they bring to the time they have. And that's when learning just accelerates in a magnificent way. So It's a very interesting dynamic. I think the time management industry really has gotten a little bit skewed in the wrong direction.
So when you look at just tennis in general, I mean, it's come pretty far, right? Like you were at the forefront of this, but now we see players, you know, openly discussing, I need a break. I need to take a break from my mental health, kind of do a reset. What do you hope tennis learns about mental health in the next decade?
Well, when you have people at the top of the game, like Sinner, he's probably one of the best examples that I could possibly give in almost every category. His parents just gave him the opportunity. You know, if he wanted to be a skier, they supported that. If he wanted to be a tennis player, just go for it. But they didn't really define for him what success was, and that Jannik Sinner will tell you over again, I just want to get better. I love learning. I love just being out there. And if I get to number one, it's fantastic. But I think there's more. I want to find out what my limits are. And I'm going to continue to push the envelope. I'll surround myself with people like Darren Cahill and others that help me go a little deeper in terms of the talent base that I have. He's on a journey to really understand what his limits are and the joy of participating in tennis. And he's very grateful for that opportunity. And in that envelope is such an insightful look into what it takes, the way he handles himself on the court, his respectfulness for his opponents. Instantly, he's on the other side of the court if someone looks like they might be injured. He'll sit on the bench next to them until they're sure that they're okay. He has a concern for others, but he wants to win. And that was one of the things I so admired about Monica Seles. A massive heart, but also she almost cried when she made people feel badly because she beat them pretty solidly. And that you can have both. If you're a compassionate, warm, caring person with great integrity, it doesn't mean you have to be a ruthless life taker. You can be a fully functioning person. And we have someone like Sinner, and we have so many great examples of this all the way up and down. We need to highlight that. Not just their win-loss record, but who they are as a person as they go into these battles and how they prepare and how they deal with losses, how they deal with injuries, and the way in which they present themselves to the world. I think that is one of the things we'll see in the future more, highlighting that part of it as opposed to just the records of winning and losing. And the notion of recovery, stress, recovery, balancing. I loved your interview with Arantxa and, you know, with, you know, the players that you have highlighted and their concern for, you know, recovery and balance. And that is a huge issue. It is for me. I'm always looking at how you're balancing stress and recovery. And if you don't get that right, your mental toughness goes out the window.
You've helped so many people, Jim, over the years in every walk of life and particularly in our little tennis community. But I want to ask you, who helped you understand your own emotional and mental life? Was there someone who gave you, Jim Lehrer, permission to, I guess, to be human, to be who you are?
You know, I would say, I mean, I have a lot of people. One of the people that kind of steered me into the application of psychology to human performance, Dr. Joe Vigil, a brilliant, brilliant exercise physiology, instilled in me when there was no space to enter. It was almost like I had to create it. And he really felt I had the ability to do that. But I have to say that the greatest teachers I've had are all the athletes that I've had the opportunity to work with. I've had world-class teachers, and I've learned maybe more from them than they learned from me. Mm. They have been the reservoirs of extraordinary insight, sometimes very painful, but how to manage mistakes like Riley Opelka, 2 years off the tour with unbelievable injuries, and then his resilience and coming back and going from almost 300 in the world to top 50 in 1 year, and what it took for him to actually do that, and how does a person find hope when your body has let you down over and over and over again, and everyone says, and the history books will say you have no shot. and yet he persevered. And we never know, but he's giving it the best shot. And I learned from that. For me, the most important lessons that I've learned from so many in the crucible of stress, do not fear stress. Invite it into your life. Stress is going to help you. And if you can get on the opportunity side of the equation as opposed to the threat side, everything that comes your way, every single crisis, every injury is an opportunity to learn and to understand how to deal with the forces of life a little better, prepare yourself for the next storm that might drop. And so in terms of managing stress, make sure that you control the things you can. The first one is you always, like Rafa, have the greatest attitude no matter what. You just give the maximum effort at the most positive side of the equation you can and let the cards fall where they may. So that at the end of that match, you can say, I was as positive as I could be. I never focused on the negative. I gave 100% of the best effort I have. And my inner voice coaching was, if it was projected onto a jumbotron, I would be pleased and the world would see that. I would be confident of how I coach myself in those moments. And if you get A's on all three of those, I'm promising you, you'll start being an unimaginably tough competitor because you're controlling the only things you can. And then the last thing I ask them, did you make that mistake on purpose? And they'll go, no. So why do you beat yourself up about it? If you could have avoided that mistake, would you have done it? Absolutely. Well, then how can you hold yourself accountable for something you can't control? That will make you crazy.
So before I let you go, and as insightful as ever, Jim, and I appreciate your time, if you could, you know, speak directly to a young player now who's struggling, say, quietly on their own with anxiety, fear, self-doubt, what would you say to them?
I would say, you know, this, for every person in life, this comes and goes in their life. And this is a crisis maybe for you, and it could be maybe a really deep storm for you. Mental health and the fears and anxieties and everything that come with, you know, these storms that exist. You know, inside every storm is an opportunity to learn and to understand how your diet, how your exercise, how what you think, how you connect with other people, your character, reaching out and helping other people, like Andre Agassi repurposed his career to build charter schools. And something magical happened to him. He got a whole new kind of energy around it. You need energy to fight the storms. And you have to have the sense that I can do this. I will find answers. And so don't be overwhelmed with the fact that you have a storm that other people don't have. This may be the opportunity of a lifetime for you to actually learn how to deal with the tough times in life. Let's repurpose this storm for you to become a better human being. And every day you're going to approach it and try to learn from it and find ways to control it better. And for the rest of your life, you'll be able to look back and say, I conquered that. I was someone who was so nervous. I was always afraid. I was on the negative side. I was always threatened. That's not who I am now. And I'm going to thank tennis for the rest of my life for helping me break through that.
Well, I want to thank you, Jim, for all you've done and for continuing to remind us that tennis is a sport played by human beings, right? Not by machines. And that we and you have helped us value the entire human being, the person, you know, behind these all-time greats and behind just, you know, regular players like journeyman players like me and then players that didn't even make it. So on behalf of all of us in that, certainly at the Hall of Fame, but in tennis in general, I want to thank you for your decades of work. And it's obviously, I get very emotional just, you know, being able to talk to you, you know, now that I'm a little bit older, you know, you see things differently and you remind us that greatness isn't just about what, you know, players achieve, but about who they are and how they get there along the way.
100%. As I said in the beginning, it's always an honor to somehow connect with you and the work that you're doing. And, you know, there are a few people that actually make a big difference in our world of tennis. It's a small world, but there are some really powerful leaders who are making a big difference. And I would put you in that special group. So thank you for all that you've done for tennis. And I'm sure you will continue to do this for a long, long time in the future.
Right back at you, Jim. Dr. Jim Lehr here. Thank you for joining us on the Tennis Worthy Podcast.